What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Black Corporate Life Podcast, where we're breaking the silence and revealing the unwritten rules and hidden truths that govern corporate America. I'm your host, James Friesen. In this groundbreaking series, we're leaving no stone unturned. Join us as we champion authenticity and transparency and bring these topics front and center, one episode at a time. In today's episode, we'll talk about how to use your influence to create opportunities for others. This is an episode you don't want to miss. Our guest today is Gerard Littlejohn. He is a marketing and social impact veteran with nearly 15 years of professional experience. He's the founder of Creators Collab, which is a strategy and content development company that delivers tailored solutions to organizations looking to tell impactful stories and make authentic connections with multicultural audiences. Gerard also serves as Senior Director of Partnerships and Social Impact for GMR Marketing. Previously, he served as the Executive Director of the Steve Smith Family Foundation and held various roles with the Charlotte Hornets, Lowe's, Dick's Sporting Goods, and United Way. Now, I've known Gerard for over 12 years, going back to our days in retail. He is a UNC Charlotte alum, husband, father, personal friend, and all-around great brother. Gerard, welcome to the show, brother.
What's up, man? How's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm excited about this. You and I have had quite a few rounds of conversation, and you've told me about this, and man, I couldn't be more excited to get on here. One, share some knowledge, but then two, man, just kick it with you, man. So I'm excited.
Cool, man. I really appreciate your time and you just joining the show, man. And I'm really excited for our audience just to hear about you, your background, and what you got going on right now. To kind of kick us off, man, tell me a little bit about your career, your story, and how did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, man. So for me, my career, I've been at this since 2006. So it's 2024 now. So, man, I'm tiptoeing into being, I guess, an OG, a young OG. But no, I've had a longstanding career in, I call it marketing, PR, and really essentially like integrated marketing. But no, I went to college, as you said in my bio, went to college at UNC Charlotte. Then I got into professional sports, actually while I was in college, interning with the Charlotte Hornets. Then I transitioned into corporate America and worked at Lowe's and Dick's Sporting Goods in various corporate marketing roles. Then did really kind of, I'd say, kind of a stint in nonprofit, went to United Way and was director of marketing and engagement there. And then went to kind of this hybrid, I went on the athlete side and on the athlete foundation side, so sort of nonprofit, and did that for a number of years to where I've also now shifted and heavily in the agency world where I wear two hats to where I work for a sports marketing agency, GMR Marketing, while I also have ventured into entrepreneurship and started my own video production company called Creators Collab, where we do a lot when it comes to creating spaces for Black creatives while also doing corporate and brand storytelling. So I'm content, number one, proud of my journey. And more than anything, and I know we'll get into it, I'm just really passionate now about how I create for other people, particularly Black people. That's really what drives me, what has been the undergirding of my career. And really because I experienced it myself, where I've had people to help me, to reach out, to open up doors, to leverage their networks. And now I'm just really on the quest of doing the exact same thing for other Black professionals.
Awesome. So let's go back for a second. In college, what did you study? Like, what was your major and what did you think you were going to do when you got out?
My degree was in communications. I didn't intend for that to be my major. My major was really computer science. And for most of what coming up in education, when I was in elementary and middle school and high school, everything was about technology. And it still is, but everything was about computers and information systems. And so I went to UNC Charlotte. And even before I got to UNC Charlotte, looking at A&T, looking at other schools, I was really big on wanting to get into information systems, so IT or computer science. I went to UNC Charlotte to do that and quickly learned that is not my calling. Just with the amount of statistics and calculus and all those things, I literally failed miserably at that. So my degree was in communications. I've always been a great writer, great communicator. Back in the day, that's considered a soft skill. And so didn't really know that that could take me to where I am now, which is a whole different story in itself of just what you're exposed to when you're young. but that was my major. But that was able to just kind of provide for me kind of that fork in the road and just kind of shine light on what I could possibly be. My background and my degree was in communications and PR.
Got you. So how did you penetrate the sports world? How did you get into that market?
I grew up loving sports. I was involved in sports at an early age. I really gravitated towards sports because my mom was a single mom. My dad was in my life, but he was in and out. And sports always gave me that consistent male presence, gave me that father figure through a number of coaches in the community. And I grew up in a small town, Lexington, North Carolina. So everyone knew everyone. And so I was able to really build relationships with a lot of men through coaching and view them all somewhat as father figures, and they would invest in me. That being said, sports has always been just huge in my life. Taught me the majority of my life lessons, overcoming adversity, how to deal with hardships, teamwork, camaraderie, like all those things as we transition to the corporate world that you take with you. I learned them all almost exclusively through sports. But also my view of sports was very narrow because, again, I came from a small town. So I did not know that there was a business of sports behind the scenes. I would watch, like, let's just say I watch an NBA game and Michael Jordan and Allen Iverson do their post-game interviews. I thought that was just it. And then everybody packs up and goes home. I had no idea that there was marketing, legal, human resources, now graphic design, social. I had no idea all those things, sponsorships. No, I had no idea all of that was part of sports. I just saw the competitive side of it. I get to college, and like I've said before, I get to college and realize what I went to college for was not going to be what I did with my life. I really spent a lot of time figuring out what else was out there. And as I was in college, like everyone else is, you're just exploring not just what career path you want to take, but then also socially and what circles you want to be in and just exploring the world around you. And so as I started to do that while I was in college, I stumbled across internship opportunities, particularly with the Charlotte Hornets. And there was everything I just listed, from HR to communications to marketing to ticket sales, so all these different things. And honestly, that was when, after I realized you could, as a college student, go and work for any organization, unpaid at the time, but you can go and work for any organization and get experience. That is actually when I learned that there was more. To back up, I also joined a sports marketing club at UNC Charlotte that met once a month on Wednesdays. And particularly there was the summer before my junior year, I believe, there was a guest speaker from the Hornets who was in community relations, just like you and I have both worked within that department. There was someone from community relations that came and talked about what the Hornets do, how they work in the community, what they do during games, to talk about their relationship with the Boys and Girls Club and hospital visits and all these different things. And I literally remember leaving that guest speaker who came to speak to us. I called my dad and I was like, yo, I think I found what I want to do with my life. I want to work in sports behind the scenes. It was like discovering a whole new world. And it was from that point on, I was hooked. And I went to my advisor and she told me about what are the best practices. And to be quite honest, I have no idea from when I talked to her. Somehow I ended up getting a call back from the Hornets. And honestly, my career has been in sports pretty much ever since then. I don't know if she put a word in for me. I don't know them. I don't know if it was just luck of the draw. Primarily, it was God's hand, you know, if I'm just being real. But needless to say, that's how I got into it. But largely, it was based on a lot of me being naive and then discovery, really the intersection of those two things and opportunity and being at the right place at the right time. And that's where I'm here now. So that was it. A lot of discovery. And I would say we as Black folks, we just aren't always exposed to what you could be, and you can't be what you can't see. And for me, once I saw it, I was hooked. And now I try to make sure that I'm helping young Black professionals, men and women, as they start to imagine what things could be. I try to help them along those lines much earlier now. And it's really been a blessing.
So going to the Hornets, I mean, that's like a dream job for a lot of folks. What made you decide to transition over to the corporate side?
Well, it was done for me. It was 2008, which was a recession all in itself. And unfortunately, there were some layoffs. It wasn't for me. But really what I'd say is when it comes to transitioning from sports to corporate, the Hornets was absolutely a dream job, without a doubt. Let me start there. Having that opportunity with the Hornets at such a young age was absolutely a dream job. It was somewhere where in my mind I thought that I was going to be there for 20 years, that just with the culture within the building, just from the exposure that I had from, I was on the team side doing public relations. So anytime we signed a player, hired a coach, anything dealing with on-court news or happenings, I was writing press releases or crafting game notes and working with local media and working with players on photo shoots and video shoots and commercial opportunities. And just like with the community relations stuff, I was going with players to their public appearances. It was an amazing time in my life for a 22, 23-year-old kid traveling with the team. Like, I did everything. And it was such an amazing opportunity. It was drinking from a fire hose from a lot of times. It was non-traditional hours that now have helped me in my journey now, because I always work non-traditional hours. That's just a staple. And now it's just part of our work culture, so to speak. But it got me out of my comfort zone early. And you just talk about like culture shock in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm traveling all over the country as, again, a 22, 23-year-old kid. So I got a chance to see the world. I got a chance to see how big the world is, how small I am. And so the transition really was good for me in the long run, because it opened up my aperture to see how business, not just sports business, but business, how it works in the grand scheme of things. Make no mistake about it, while I did not like that I quote unquote lost my dream job, because it was at that point in time, that was my dream job. But it also opened up my eyes to how not just a team and their infrastructure works, but how that fits into the overall infrastructure and the overall orbit of sports to a degree, but then also, again, just corporate America, how this behemoth of capitalism, so to speak, like how it all works. It was honestly the best thing to happen for me, because, again, it's just really been able to widen my purview of the world in and of itself.
So did you experience any challenges making that transition over to corporate? Like, how was that for you?
The experience transition to corporate, if I'm being honest, was very difficult for me. It was very difficult. Having gone from working in professional sports to then now having to go to corporate America, some of these brands are Fortune 50, Fortune 100, Fortune 200. And so having to transition from that to going to huge corporate offices, from going to, in pro sports, believe it or not, the crew itself or the staff itself is not relatively big. And at that point in time, we were the only Black-owned professional sports team in all of the major four sports. It's really going from and having a lot of high-ranking Black people and a lot of high-ranking roles from COO to CMO to public relations, like seeing people of color in various high ranking roles, to going to corporate America, where we all know it's absolutely inverted. It was tough for me. It was really tough. And the reason why it was tough was a number of things. One, it was, again, going from a small-ish, while it is pro sports, going from a small-ish staff to thousands upon thousands of people that are within these corporate headquarter buildings. So that for me was tough, because it was essentially being a big fish in a small pond, even though I was young, but I garnered a lot of relational equity with a lot of people. So going from a big fish in a small pond to a small fish in a big pond is what it felt like to me. And that was tough. The other part why it was tough was that was the first time that I had to get used to office culture. And what I mean by that is not necessarily I had to get used to my day being run off of Outlook. I had to get used to being in my inbox. I had to get used to morning stand-up meetings. I had to get used to one-on-ones. I had to get used to like what we're now used to and ingrained that we're used to doing that. I had to get used to it. And then the third thing I would say, which is probably most important and probably what made me feel as small as humanly possible, would be when my counterparts, who were predominantly white, would talk about maybe what they did over the weekend or what they're doing after work and going to the lake and all these cultural nuances that I was completely unaware of. When it came to people talking about their kids' games over the weekend, or like I said, going to the lake or going to this place and that place, I had no idea what they were talking about. My day to day was completely different. At that time, I'm younger, I was single, so I go home and play video games, or I go and hoop with my friends, or I would go, like, just my day to day was completely different. Or I go in a nightclub. It was so different. And I just wasn't used to being around that. And not saying that that's bad, but I was not used to that. With all those things compounding, it was just very tough for me. And I also didn't have how I grew up. I grew up in small rural North Carolina. Everything was furniture, factory jobs, or hourly jobs at a fast food retail place or just big box retail. So I just wasn't used or had anyone to talk about corporate experiences like that. My folks didn't necessarily know that. It was just a really odd time for me because I just didn't have any relational equity with these folks. I didn't have, I would say, cultural awareness, so to speak. I couldn't relate culturally. And then just the wave of going from, again, just a, while still important and still highly visible, working in pro sports. And I work with, again, national media, local media, but still just kind of being in a smaller box to going to, again, you're dealing with thousands of people, 200 plus locations. Like, it was just a lot for me. It was a lot. So it took me a while to really get my bearings underneath me going to corporate America. It was very tough.
So what were some of the things that you did to get through that experience? Did you have a coach? Did you have a friend or somebody you talked to? How did you adjust to those challenges?
That's a great question. How I adjusted was really, that was when I realized the power of having to have a network and having to have mentors. And I've had some, I won't even say anecdotally, like going back to my time with the Hornets, my boss at the time, brother named BJ Evans, was one of, I think at that time, he was one of only two Black people to run communication departments for NBA teams. It was BJ and another brother named Arthur who ran the department down with the Atlanta Hawks. BJ was a huge, and still is, a great mentor to where I can just bounce ideas off of. Probably talked more at that point in time about life than we did talk about basketball or court stuff. Laughed and joked and talked about trivia with Martin or watching The Wire and all these different things. But it was someone who I built relational equity with. So being able to use that. And then when I did get in corporate America, it was finding other people who looked like me. I did that immediately. It was also being able to entrust people that didn't look like me, that were able to give me, whether it was pointers, whether it was I could have really transparent conversation about how I'm feeling and how to navigate through. And then also what I'm seeing, because I also didn't know what I was seeing at the time either. So also having people to invest in me, that was probably the biggest thing of, hey, do this and not that. And quite honestly, I hit my head a lot of times. I hit my head even with management from, again, not understanding that things sometimes have to shift. I remember there was one story of my supervisor at the time had to push our one-on-one back multiple times. And now looking back, hindsight 2020, we do that all the time, right? Like you have to, sometimes you just have priorities come up. At that time I was working in PR. So things and crises come up when you don't expect them to. That's what makes it a crisis. As things would come up, I remember just my one-on-one getting shifted all the time. And I took it at one point in time very personally. And I ended up confronting someone about how I felt. And to be honest, it was probably not the right thing to do, or it was definitely not right to lead with my emotions first. And so I did that. And it led to a not so good conversation. But honestly, I ended up learning from that conversation of, here's why that had to get pushed. And I had to say, here's why and here's how I'm feeling. And I think it was a learning opportunity for both, because that supervisor was able to see, wow, he's really struggling with adjusting to corporate life. The way that I interact and how I see things were able to be kind of invested in that person. And so it was good for me, but needless to say, it was very tough. So what did help through that transition period when I was struggling was, again, really being able to find people who have the lived experience, who have worked in corporate America, who have gone down that path before, who I could trust, were really the big markers and indicators for that change of my transition. And then it was also just once I started getting the reps up underneath me it becomes second nature to where I was just way more prepared. So I'd say the biggest thing was just being able to rely on a network. And also that's what started to build that network and started to build what I call like a circle of trust, to where I would be able to have people who could invest in me for being me. That's really what helped.
That's awesome. So one of the things that I learned, and I tell people all the time, is in corporate, you need to have a mentor and a sponsor. And they're not the same people. When I went to my first NASCAR race way back in the day, I wasn't familiar with NASCAR, didn't know anything about the sport. But I had a second opportunity to go with a company, and this time we were in a suite. And what I learned is that the drivers have a spotter that's actually up on the top of the roof. When I think about mentors and sponsors, a mentor is having an experienced driver, like a Kurt Busch or a Tony Stewart or whoever, to sort of mentor you. They've been in the game. They've driven cars before. They have that experience. They can help show you the ropes. But a sponsor is somebody that can look down from up above at a much higher level, and they can tell you what's happening outside of your purview that you may not know about. And they can say, hey, Jimmy Johnson, you got the number 8 car coming up on your left. You need to move to the left to block them. You always have to have both. You got to have somebody that's much higher, that has some power and authority, that can see things happening and make opportunities happen for you. But you also need a mentor that can kind of coach you through your current job and what you're going through right now. So it's very important to have both. So cool, Gerard. So talk to me about, what are you doing now? So we talked about the sports world. We talked about your transition into corporate. What we haven't talked about is what you're doing now. We haven't talked about Creators Collab as well. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, man. Creators Collab is really birthed out of a lot of these experiences that we're talking about. As I navigated through all these different stops in my career, whether it was pro sports, whether it was corporate America, whether it was nonprofit, any part, what I would notice all the time would be, and as also I got deeper and deeper as to crafting marketing campaigns, writing out messaging, kind of quarterbacking a lot of these content opportunities, or just large scale when we're about to announce something or roll out a launch or anything like that. When it came to primarily on the marketing side, and primarily even to drill down and double click even more into when we were creating content, I would never see Black people in positions of, again, crafting messaging, strategically rolling out how we're going to message something or how we're going to roll things out. Or even from a granular standpoint, when it is time to tell those stories, I would never see us capturing that information, just be able to show what it's supposed to look like. I would never see it. The flip side of that coin would be oftentimes our stories are the ones getting told, whether it's from a nonprofit standpoint, you're capitalizing on the story of Black or Hispanic people and maybe the plight that they're in, or from the pro sports standpoint, we're talking about an athlete's performance on the field, male or female, but we never really get a chance to hear what that person is like off the field or anything in between when it came to storytelling with Black people or on Black people or people of color. I would just see that there would be a huge miss. And then when you would start to see a lot of these campaigns that maybe had been challenging, whether it is advertising campaigns with slurs on a shirt or things that were not culturally aware that a lot of brands, and I won't say who they are, but a lot of brands ended up falling on their face on. I just noticed that a lot. And quite honestly, even before the murder of George Floyd, it was just something that was illuminating in my mind. And I also juxtapose that with just the change in which brands were starting to message things on their own, right? Using their own channels to communicate initiatives and no longer being relying, for me, from being primarily on a PR standpoint, no longer having to pitch an idea to USA Today or to ESPN or to Yahoo or whatever in order to get coverage. So with those two things kind of converging, I started really thinking about, how do we tell stories differently while also creating a space for Black people who always don't have a seat at the table, primarily from a creative and marketing standpoint? Because I was experiencing that. I would experience, we're rolling out an initiative, that may be targeted from a multicultural perspective, but my opinion wasn't asked. Or by the time I am involved in it, it's already too late. It's already rolling out. So it's more of a, hey, how does this look? It was like, I would have had a different opinion if I would have been in there from the onset. Really, I'd say shortly before 2020 is when I just kind of had this aha moment. I was working on a campaign. I kind of pointed to this before, but we were telling stories of people who had been affected by various entities in the community. And so we were storytelling against a woman who had relocated from New Jersey to North Carolina, was struggling with affordable housing, didn't have a place to stay, was homeless for a little while, got involved with various groups, and then found some stable housing in a traditionally Black neighborhood of Charlotte. And I guess my goal or my assignment was to create a campaign, a visual campaign, leveraging her as one of three stories for this particular brand. And when it was time to do that, we had done pre-production. We had crafted some questions that we were going to ask. We were actually on location at this woman's house. And I had, was able to freelance out a production crew. And when I did that, we go on location to this woman's house. This crew was all white, but again, I'm used to that. But I go to this woman's house and we're about to do an interview. We're about to just really dig in. And you, one, you could start to see her build up this anxiety. This is the first time she's done this. You got people coming into her kitchen, cameras and lights and audio and people and all that stuff. So you could start to see her get nervous. And then the first question that was asked from the producer, who was not from that particular producer, who ventured off the script, as we sometimes do, just to get people comfortable and to just kind of slide in. But the first question that was asked was, I'll always remember this. She asked, when did you realize you were poor?
Black Corporate Life is a leadership training and development company focused on empowering Black professionals to thrive in corporate America. We provide classes, coaching, and an online community of like-minded individuals to help Black men and women in corporate America reach their full potential. Join our online community at bclalliance.com.
I'm like, huh? And something like we know just from a relational equity standpoint, and again, this was a Black woman, a single mom who had enough on her plate, and then we are coming in there to do an interview. And that was just something like, you don't do, that's a line you don't cross. And so I text my boss at the time, who was another great mentor of mine to this day. We still talk every couple of weeks, but I text him and I said, hey, here's what just happened. What do I do? And he immediately texted me back and was like, hey, you take charge. You ask the questions that we need to get the content that we need, get out of it, because it was a 2-day shoot, and get out of there. And so that's exactly what I did. And when I was driving home that day, that's really when the light bulb went off of, there's got to be a different way to do this. One, there's got to be a way in which we tell stories through built equity with people, that we see people as people and not essentially poverty porn. That's what that was. Like, I'll call that. It was kind of exposing their story for gain. And then also, how can I diversify that room? How can I diversify all these rooms? Because when I was in these boardrooms, when I'm in these conference rooms, when I'm in these moments, again, sometimes I'm not there. I'm the one who's got the marketing degree. I'm the one who has the experience. I'm the one who is closest to this, giving my own lived experience, not just my work experience, my own lived experience. I'm closest to this, but sometimes I'm not in the room. Sometimes my voice isn't called upon. And as I started matriculating through these tables, and I do have a say, and I have cracked the door open, I also wanted to diversify these rooms to where the next juror comes in. And quite honestly, we're having a seat at the table, but over the course of time, we got our own table. And that's really my biggest goal. So that was when the light bulb went off. I want to say that was around 2018. Had this idea of, all right, well, maybe I need to start a production company. Because I'd done like freelance PR and had a couple clients. But again, with that kind of juxtaposition of where the world was going when it came to content and PR and storytelling and all of this, I was like, all right, I want to do something different. And that's where Creators Collab was born. And so we started doing some smaller projects here and there. And I had built a network of, whether it was through corporate world, or whether it was through nonprofit world, or even whether it was through the church I was going through it at that particular time, I built up this network of Black creatives, and I just wanted to start empowering them, bringing them on. And we started really small, man. We started really small doing nonprofit stuff, some stuff with different churches. And then 2020 happened, and you had more people, I think, that were apt to the messaging of our mission, of our story. I think that started turning a bit more attention to us through, whether I liked that or not, whether that was virtue signaling or not, it got us more attention. And then we got an offer to start working on some high-end brand stuff, and we've been at it ever since. And end of 2021, so around August, September of 2021, I started doing this full time, and really been at it ever since, grown to what we've got now, just kind of a network of around 12 to 15 videographers, photographers, and everything in between. We've worked on, I mean, big brand storytelling, from made Fortune 50 brands to pro sports to PGA to, we've been all over the place. And just in 2023, through the company, I've been able to inject around $150,000 back into the Black creative space here in Charlotte. And that makes me proud. It makes me damn proud, to be honest with you, just because, not just the amount of money, but just the amount of opportunity, to where literally bringing people inside corporate walls, literally having those same meetings, and I'm bringing my crew, and we are making these spaces diverse. I mean, it brings me all the joy in the world to know that I'm making a difference within not just the creative community, but just Black professionals, because I know how much I needed that.
Wow. So, Gerard, what I love about that story, man, is I didn't even know that story, first of all, as long as I've known you. I didn't know the details behind how everything got started. But what I love about it is, while you were working and you were doing your own career, you saw and noticed some things. You noticed some challenges, some gaps, and you decided to make a move and fill those gaps, to create something out of nothing. And I just wonder, what advice would you have to other folks, our listeners who are checking out the podcast right now, who might see some gaps as well? What would you say to them to just kind of get started and address issues like that?
I would say, if you're considering how to make an impact, it doesn't have to be as grandiose as you think. Like you said, I just saw repeatedly where there were gaps, and I took my experience, my skill set, what I had to offer, and then aligned it against what I was seeing as, I would do this differently, I would do that differently. Again, during 2020, while I had already kind of launched this and we were still crawling, I would just sit back and look at all these brands who were voicing their support of the Black community, who were creating initiatives, who were crafting messaging, whatever it was. And I would just sit back and say, I'd do that different. I'd have done this way. I'd have done it that way. And quite honestly, I built up the fortitude to actually start pitching and say, hey, here's what I saw. How can I come alongside? How can we plus this up? And so I say all that to just say, while that did build up into something that some things that we do, I'll be honest with you, it's major, some of the things that we're doing. But just to start out, I think it is really, one, identifying gaps that you see, because there are a ton of gaps. There's a ton of gaps. We all know that when it comes to being a Black professional working in corporate America, I mean, we can go on. We'd be on a podcast for 5 hours just talking about all the opportunities and all the broken links in the chain. Just being able to point out and what you can do about it. I'd say the second thing is the power of mentoring is invaluable. Just having someone who is a young Black professional, or even a mid-Black professional, because I'm not going on 40. There are still times I just want to be able to reach out and say, hey, what are you thinking about this? How do you see it? What am I missing here? How can I do this better? What did you see when you were my age? I still thirst for that. Where I'm going with is just being able to find that young Black male, that young Black woman who, I'm telling you, they're thirsting for whatever it is that you have. And I don't care if you work in accounting, if you work in treasury, if you work in graphic design, like whatever it is, there is someone young aspiring to be where you are at. I think just being able to tap into just that part is, I'm telling you, it's invaluable. And because, and I take it in a different way, but because we don't always lack education opportunities. We do, but that's a whole different discussion. Where I'm going with this is we can go to our schools, our HBCUs, we can go to PWIs, we can get the degrees. Those are great. That's fantastic. But the real work starts when you're trying to break into the social capital game. And that is what I largely lacked in my career starting out, is I didn't have that social capital. I didn't have that social capital when I was an intern, but I got brought into the room by another Black man who would take me out to lunch, BJ, who would take me out to lunch, and we would just crack jokes and talk about hip hop and TV shows and all this different stuff. But when it came time to, I needed him for something, like he hired me for a part-time job when I was a senior in college to then replace the work study I was doing, the part-time job that I had to carry during my internship because I still needed to eat because, again, I was a single-parent kid and we didn't have a lot coming up. But that was the social capital part, the social capital of when I am in corporate America and I'm struggling to adjust. But I have, like you talked about before, having those mentors, having those spotters who can see things before I can even see it, having those people in my life. Again, that is the social capital. All of that to say, I think what gets overlooked when it comes to young, particularly Black and Hispanic or in minority professionals is you don't see anybody who looks like you when you walk into these rooms. And when you do have someone that you can aspire to be, you just want to attach yourself to them. At least that's my standpoint. That is the part that any Black, I don't care if you're early in your career and you're at the coordinator level and you're 27, 28, trying to get to that manager level, there's still someone who's at the entry level who wants your information. How do you do that? Or you're kind of that midlife professional, or you're at the director level and particularly at the C-suite level. But I just think anyway, and as an entrepreneur as well, I just think that there is someone who will rip someone's arm out the socket to be where you are. When you're able to tap into that, that's just the thing. Like just having a coffee, have a lunch, whatever it is, like being able to invest just from the relational equity, because you'll be surprised once you drop someone into your circle, what that will be. Real quick, I'll give an example. Like there's really all of my crew are that, but I got one particular creator videographer that really has the same walk that I do, from single parent home to he's from New York, relocated to Raleigh, went to the same college as me, all these different things. And he started out with me early and we started doing small projects together. Next thing you know, a Walmart calls. Next thing you know, a Lowe's calls. Next thing you know, like all these different brands will call, and been able to travel all around the country. He just got back last week from a project that we were doing in New Orleans. But what's been even cooler is to see him network. Once I dropped him in my network, to see him network within that network. And then, man, I think it was summer of this year, I was in New York. And I think I posted something on my Instagram, like I was going out to get dinner with a friend up in New York. And he responds back to me. He's like, yo, you in New York? And I'm like, yeah, I'm in New York. He's like, yo, I'm here. Like, let's get together. And I'm like, yo, what are you doing in New York? And he's like, yeah, such and such and such hired me. And I'm doing a video at the NBA headquarters. It's through my network. And that's not for me to brag, but so to speak, I kind of am, because he's worked his network within my network. And it's provided him opportunities. And some of the same people that I know now hire him. And he does his own thing. And he sent me a really long text message a couple of days ago telling me kind of that same thing while he was in New Orleans of how much it's helped him. Like, man, that's invaluable. I'll get choked up if I talk about it too long, because for me, that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about, is being able to gain a network, leverage a network, and then help somebody else when you get in there. And that goes back to my overall goal of, man, I love having a seat at the table. It means nothing if I don't have anyone else. And the long-term goal, and I don't always say this out loud, but the real long-term goal is we got our own table. And we don't need that table anymore. We got ours. For me, that's really big. Like, that's a huge part. That's what I'm doing it for. It doesn't matter all the other bells and whistles. Yeah, I can sit here and be like, oh, man, I got a cool trip to New York out of it. That means nothing to me. What really gets me going is being able to drop people into that network, to be able to just pay it forward. As simple as that. Just being able to pay it forward and being able to leverage the knowledge that I got, the game that someone kicked to me, and I kicked that same game to someone else. And now their career trajectory has skyrocketed from it. And I can run off 5-10 more examples of something like that too, of getting people full-time employment, having people working for different teams now in video and content roles and internships, all these different things that have kind of been birthed out of. It's almost like the whole, what you call it, like the Bill Belichick tree or the Andy Reid tree or some of these other things in football. Like, I got a tree too. And that for me, yeah, when I sit, if I sit and think about it too much, I get emotional, because that to me is what it's all about.
That's deep, brother. So speaking of having a seat at the table and creating your own table, for those professionals out there that want to work with you guys at Creatives Collab or companies that want to hire you guys, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Definitely go to our website, www.creators-collab.com. You'll be able to see projects that we've worked on, really, again, our mission, see it live. And then another part, of course, we've got an Instagram at creators.collab. We're on YouTube. Again, you can see a lot of our work and more to come. I actually got an update with quite a few pieces that we've been working on. But that's it. And then, of course, you know, you can always hit me up. I'm on all the various channels, from LinkedIn to Instagram to Facebook to all these different things. So I'm not hard to find. But like, long story short, I'm proud, man. Like, I'm proud. I think there are a number of different brands and different industries that we worked in that we really, I would say, can flex our cultural expertise and our core competencies. We do a lot within the multicultural space from various different brands. So that's just kind of our bread and butter, just given our lived and learned experiences. All of us come from various walks of life. So I think that's one that we've been able to build a lot of equity in. I think we build a lot of the equity within the sports space and sports storytelling. So we've done feature work that has gone on sports broadcast channels, that's been with the major NFL teams and auto racing and all of these different entities. We've been able to chop our teeth on, and a lot of us have experience, whether it is from PGA to NASCAR itself to sports teams. We've all been able to dabble in it. So that's spot. And then just your typical corporate and nonprofit storytelling, the who, what, when, where, just kind of the video business cards and awareness videos, just introductory, here's who we are kind of content. We do a ton of that too, whether it's flexing from nonprofits to hospital systems. We do everything in between. And so I believe we've really been able to gain a lot of equity across a lot of different industries. And I think what makes us unique is, because anyone can pick up a camera, anyone can edit in Final Cut Pro or whatever it is. Like, I can get granular in the nerdy stuff. But my point is, anyone can do that. I think what makes us different is that we bring a unique cultural perspective. Quite frankly, we are the culture. For a lot of brands who are now trying to get more in tune and tap in to that, they want to be more relevant. They want their audiences to reflect the most multicultural audience that there has ever been. And to this day, in 2024, essentially, it's a melting pot. Our crew reflects that. We're able to apply that when it comes to storytelling or creating content or anything in between, is because we are that. I think that's what makes it most unique, is that that is the secret sauce, so to speak, is that we are able to apply that from pre-production to on-site to post-production. Like, we just know how to make shit cool. And so when you're able to do that, and when you're able to speak to these rooms in the same way as I talk about my journey, in the same way that I was able to, over the course of time, be able to use my voice, use my lived experience, use my learned experience, now I'm just doing that from a consultatory piece, and it's paying dividends.
Awesome. So for our audience, we've learned three lessons from Gerard today. Number one, don't be afraid to try something new and different in your career. And as Gerard mentioned, it led to a lot of opportunities for him throughout his career. The second lesson is, be sure to ask for help when you need it. No reason to struggle alone or suffer in silence. So be willing to ask somebody, if it's a peer, mentor, friend, somebody in another business, reach out when you need that help. And number three, always remember to leverage your influence to create opportunities for others. It is true that we cannot be what we cannot see. You want to always make sure you're reaching back to bring somebody else along. So I'm going to throw it back to you one more time, Gerard. Any last final thoughts for our listeners before we roll out?
One thing that's on my mind, I was listening to a panel years ago, and they did something similar, right? Like, what are your last words? Like, what's a quick quote that you'd share? And I don't even remember this guy's name, but he said something that always sticks with me, and I say this a lot, is bloom where you plant. And bloom where you plant it, in terms of, kind of coinciding with a lot of things I said before, but whether you are, again, that 26, 27, 28, and I remember those days of just really itching to be a manager or a supervisor, or whether you are mid-level career and maybe cruising on autopilot, so to speak, like maybe life is good and you kind of got that position where it feels good and you're starting to make some money now and all that, or whether you are that director, VP and above, or that kind of C-suite level of like you've made it, like still bloom wherever you are, and bloom in a sense of not just capitalizing on, or like I said, just kind of being on autopilot, or just kind of getting in the mundane day to day of how you execute your role, but really bloom in terms of who's out there that wants to be where you are, who's out there that would essentially, again, give their right thumb to be in that seat. Everyone has something. Everyone has something to give. Everyone has a perspective that someone can relate to. My perspective may not resonate with somebody else's, but yours will. I think we all, particularly as Black professionals in any walk of life where we are within this corporate and or entrepreneurial journey, you've got something to give someone. Wherever you are planted, whether you're in entrepreneurship or whether you're in corporate America, or even if you're in a factory job or a blue collar job, like I don't care, whoever's listening to this, like you've got something to give someone else. There is something unique about you that someone else can glean from. I'm just very, very aware of that now. And I'm very, very serious about how I leverage that, because again, I can go story after story, but there's a problem out there for someone that you have the solution to. I'm just really big on that. I'm thankful for my career and the places that I have been able to be planted in and the places I have been able to bloom in. Man, I've done all the things. I've gone to Super Bowl. I've gone to NBA All-Star Game. I've interviewed NBA superstars. I've done huge campaigns. I've gone overseas to London, NFL. Like I've done a ton of things and I'm proud of them, but it don't move me like that. It doesn't move me in the same way that when I'm able to see the potential in someone and then drop them in an opportunity and see them thrive and now be able to feed their family or buy a car or whatever it is. But when I'm able to see where that opportunity here lies and then be able to really be able to give people opportunity, and not even just giving a job, but giving that advice, giving that, let's sit down and let's chop this up, or let's be able to see where your problem is or where the barrier is or whatever that particular person is going through and help to be a solution to get them from A to B. Man, that gets me going every day. And I'm thankful for my family, my wife, who's able to see that and sacrifices a lot of time that we could probably be together, but knows like, hey, he got to take this quick call because someone needs something from him. And I just hold that in high regard. I hold that as my calling. I hold that as my career aspiration. And quite honestly, it's what God put me on this earth for. Like, I know that intrinsically, and I just walk in it these days. That's what gets me jazzed up. So really long-winded version of saying, just bloom wherever you're planted. And when you bloom, make sure that you are blooming with the intentions of helping someone else get to where they need to be planted.
I appreciate that. And Gerard, just to let you know, I'm proud of what you represent, but I'm even more proud of who you are, brother. I mean, you are making an impact, and just keep doing what you're doing, man. Don't let anything step in your way or anybody tell you that you can. I know you want, but I just want you to hear that from me to you.
Man, I appreciate that. That means a lot. That means a lot. And like I said, man, I'm not removed from that. Like, I'm not removed from still needing that myself. So that's why I know that when you're a professional and you have the opportunity to just invest in someone, just as simple as sending an email or the coffee or the Zoom Connect or whatever it is, like just take the time to do it, because I'm telling you, you've got something that someone else needs. And so I still need that. I still need to hear those words. So I appreciate that. It keeps me going, man. And so we're all out here, and the same thing with you. I appreciate you creating this platform to be able to have conversations like this in a manner that we don't always get to have these conversations. So I appreciate you too, James.
Thank you, Gerard. I appreciate it, man. Be blessed, brother.
I appreciate you.
Black Corporate Life is a leadership training and development company focused on empowering Black professionals to thrive in corporate America. We provide classes, coaching, and an online community of like-minded individuals to help Black men and women in corporate America reach their full potential. Subscribe to our podcast by visiting blackcorporatelife.com or search wherever you listen to podcasts. And join the Black Corporate Life Alliance at bclalliance.com.